Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease. The doctors of the future are here." Welcome to Blue Zone Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Hi, and welcome to Blue Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for listening here today on this second day of June. I'm broadcasting here from right outside of Orlando, Florida, and we have a very interesting and enlightening show for you today. Again, I'd like to welcome all my listeners here in the U.S. and around the world, especially my friends over there in Costa Rica. Again, thank you for listening. Even if you're listening live, or if you didn't catch a live show, which we are broadcasting live right now, some of you will not catch a live show, but will listen to the archive. You can do so if you didn't know, at Blue Zone Wellness, or rather U Zone Wellness at Blog Talk Radio. I'd like to also remind you, if you want to call in, you can do so during the live show here. You can call in at 919-889-2207. That's 889-2207. Again, with the area code being 917. Again, we have a interesting show for you today. I want to remind you as well that you can listen over on, or you can follow me rather on Facebook. Again, just go to facebook.com/naturedoc, send me a friend request. And you can kind of follow the things that I'm posting there with respect to health. You can also visit Blue Zone, not Blue Zone Wellness, I'm sorry, but Phase 3 Ministries. That's PHASE, the number 3 Ministries. We have a blog going there. We are making some changes. We add the site as well as our other websites to kind of be a little bit more efficient. But again, we have a very interesting show for you today. We're going to take a quick break, about 30 seconds maybe, and we're going to come back and we're going to get started right away.
You are listening to Blue Zone Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry on BlueZoneWellness.org. Be sure to join us here every week at the same time. You can also listen at blogtalkradio.com/BlueZoneWellness. There you can also download the app and listen to the archive versions on your smartphone. So from Blue Zone Wellness, here's to your health.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work, or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We are going to go ahead and get started. Wherever you may be listening to the world, again, welcome. And we are going to start off as we normally do in our first segment. And this is a segment that we call the Weekend Natural News Review. If you're a first-time listener, this is where we go and we look at some of the natural health articles that have come out during the week, and we discuss and analyze those. And after that, we go into our next segment, which is our healing foods segment, where we look at a food or a number of foods that have healing properties, and we talk a bit about what they do and how beneficial they are to the body. Because as Hippocrates said, let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. And then finally, we'll close out in our third segment, which is the healing herb, healing supplement segment. Last week, I was talking quite a bit about tea tree oil and how it could be used. And today I'll try and finish that up. Time permitting, I may then go over into milk thistle, which is one of the most effective herbs which really has no pharmaceutical, milk thistle has no pharmaceutical equivalent. It's just that good of a herb. It's one of the few herbs that have no pharmaceutical equivalent. But we're going to go ahead and get started with our first article. Our first article that we're going to discuss and analyze today came from naturalnews.com. And this article was entitled, Cancer is Cured Safely in Spite of Widespread Submission by the Cancer Industry. And this is a very interesting article. And I would suggest that if you have cancer, or you have a loved one that has cancer, that before you are scared into certain treatments such as chemotherapy and or surgery or radiation, just to calm down and look around and do some research, and you'll find that there are other alternatives that can be used as opposed to just the three basic things that are offered by allopathic medicine, either surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy. Now, if you choose to do those, then at least before you make the decision, at least become an informed consumer so that you can see the benefits as well as the risk. Now, this particular article came out during the week in the Natural News Review that we're discussing here, again, from naturalnews.com. And the article starts off by saying, pioneering dedicated researchers have discovered numerous holistic cancer treatments in this country, that being the U.S., beginning as far back as 1840. And these natural protocols save lives from, quote, incurable cancer. It also goes on to say, leading cancer experts and authors, Dr. Samuel Epstein and Ralph Moss, who's the author of The Cancer Industry, among others, have documented widespread efforts to thwart safe cancer cures in the United States. And in other words, there have been efforts, widespread designs to undermine and to blot out, to thwart alternative therapies that are cheaper, that are safer, that are more effective, so that these therapies that are patented or that can only be used by licensed practitioners who have been set up to and educated only to use these methods, again, surgery, chemotherapy, or radiation. And the article was going to point out how the FDA will only approve pharmaceutical synthetic drugs for cancer treatments. However, even Brzezinski's attempt to patent and use life-saving angioplasties have met violent opposition. And this is a Brzezinski. Brzezinski was a doctor. There was an interesting documentary that was on online, and it was being played for free recently. And it may also still be available at Netflix. Or you can look at BrzezinskiMovie.com. That's BrzezinskiMovie.com. If you have a Netflix account, you may be able to watch it there. I don't remember if it's still on there or not, or if it's on there. I'm pretty sure it is. But it was free for a while. You may be able to find it on YouTube. But it's interesting how they basically tried to shut him down when he was offering something. He was a medical doctor offering something that had been very, very effective against cancer that did not include radiation, chemotherapy, or surgery. And as this article goes on to point out, sadly, most Americans continue using toxic and invasive radiation, chemotherapy, and surgery to treat their cancers with dubious results. And that a fortunate minority, however, have discovered effective and safe alternative cures. And then they're going to point out a few that you may or may not have heard about, and there are documentaries on these, like Hoxsey. Hoxsey was a traditional naturopath early America, and he discovered what we call the Hoxsey therapy, which was basically given down to him from his father. And he basically opened up a series of clinics here in this country. Now, it's interesting to note, as this article pointed out, but let me back up for a minute to deal with Hoxsey. If you look up the documentary, fortunately for him, he was from Texas, and he had very deep pockets. He was an oil man, if I remember correctly, and so he was able to fight off the assault of the AMA at the time. And they just followed him around and around and around. And they had a very effective campaign to try and stop. They called him a quack and all manner of words. And in fact, that's where the term was actually invented at the time by them, quackery or the quack. And in reality, the term is defined really by one who pretends he has the ability to practice medicine or pretends to have the ability to do cure, which is an ability that he does not possess. And given the track record of the treatment of cancer by traditional medicine, allopathic medicine, they actually more accurately fit the term quack than any other practitioner that I can think of on a wholesale level. By pretending to have knowledge to cure cancer, which they do not possess. Also, as this article points out, it goes on to say that Native Indians used the herb blood root to cure cancer for centuries. And in 1840, John Hopkins discovered the Hopkins therapy, which contained blood root along with other herbs with anti-cancer properties. And the article goes on to say, further, this treatment was used to successfully treat advanced cancers at 17. And then Hoxie Cancer Clinics were set up from 1924 through 1960 before being close to move down and to move to Tijuana, Mexico. And in 1954, 10 physicians evaluated hundreds of case studies, according to this article, and patients, concluding that Hoxie therapy left patients free from cancer from 6 to 24 years and in excellent health. And this is a therapy based solely on herbs. And, of course, lifestyle. And so here you have these therapies that have been around, and you have the American Cancer Society and some of these other organizations who have collected hundreds of millions of dollars in continual cancer research when there are therapies out there, when used correctly and used consistently and used efficiently, have been and can reverse, heal, cure cancer. And so a lot of cancer hospitals or cancer treatment centers have been out of the U.S. and run down to Tijuana, Mexico, which is unfortunate because many people who may otherwise have lived have died because they could not get at least have the choice to choose alternative therapies. Now, if they would have chosen to go with the allopathic methods, then that is their choice. But to simply deny them the choice to choose is unfortunate, especially here in America, where we are supposed to have a free system. The article also continues talking about the Essiac tea therapy, which many of you may have heard of, and it goes on to point out the Essiac tea is comprised of four types of herbs, and it was successfully used by the Canadian nurse Renee Cassie, who in Canada, actually. And the article goes on to say that Dr. Bruchet and several practitioners in Canada and the U.S. We use this formula to help reverse thousands of cases of advanced cancer. And this formula also originated from Native Americans. And it was actually destroyed by the Canadian ministry when the nurse Renee Cassie died in 1978. But Dr. Bruchet in the U.S. was able to create a new version of the remedy known as Flora Incense, and he marketed it as a detoxifying tea. So here you have the same type of thing going on in Canada as going on in the U.S. The Canadian ministry destroyed the formula created by of these four herbs created by this Canadian nurse, and this formula. And those who are in the natural health community are very aware, and those who are into natural health in general are very aware of Essiac tea. And this ability to help reverse cancers of all sorts. And so here we see when we wonder, well, why don't we have a cure for cancer? Why don't we have a cure for this? It's not that many cases that we don't have a cure for these things. It's just that there are many powerful interests who stand to gain or stand to lose large amounts of money and influence and power. And so therefore, in order to protect their drug trade, they would suppress and pay off politicians and pay off colleges. And if you do the research, you'll find that a lot of this is done in order to shut down therapies that are natural, that are effective, that have been given us by the Creator. And they're within the reach of all men and women in general. But as we can see, allopathic medicine too often puts effective treatment out of the hands of those, unless they're very, very wealthy, to be able to reach it. This same article goes on to point out the Gerson therapy, which was developed by Max Gerson, who was a medical doctor. And it goes on to say that brilliant physician Max Gerson, and I'm quoting, developed the Gerson therapy in the 1930s. This treatment combined organic vegetarian juices and coffee enemas to successfully treat thousands of patients from cancer and other diseases. Gerson published 50 medical papers and 3 books describing his treatment methods in detail. Gerson clinically eliminated in the U.S., but exists in Mexico and Hungary through the tireless efforts of Gerson's daughter, Charlotte. And the Gerson therapy continues to save lives. And so here you have it again. Here, one of the allopathic medical community's own doctors, Gerson, medical doctor, came out and his therapies began to become popular. He was actually ostracized. If you look at the history of it, or look at any documentaries of it, he was actually ostracized, even though he was doing something that was effective. And the doctors, their whole idea of medicine is supposed to heal, to be able to heal and cure people. But because the business aspect of it has overridden the aspect to help people, we get this type of medicine that anything that comes up that's actually effective now is actually said to be quackery, or said to be something that's not effective. And so effective has this marketing campaign been that people will actually see the numbers and will see that the treatments are not working, but will actually defend them to the death. That such is the power of marketing. This particular article goes on to point out Laetril, or vitamin B17, as well. And also goes on to point out how Laetril, a pure form of B17, has been used by physicians around the world with widely documented success to ingeniously treat cancer. The vitamin is found abundantly in certain cultural diets where no cancer exists. He goes on to say that American physician Benzel demonstrated an 87.3% success rate for advanced cancers treated with Laetril compared to a 0.1% for cancers using conventional methods. Now, that is amazing that he was able to demonstrate a success rate of 87.3% for advanced cancers treated with Laetril or vitamin B17 compared to a 0.1% for cancers using conventional medicines, advanced cancers. The article goes on to point out further, every American physician who used Laetril was, and I'm quoting, was arrested, taken to court, put in jail, or had their medical license removed for the, quote, crime of curing cancer patients. The cancer industry went on to almost entirely eliminate the sale in the U.S. of apricot seeds, a rich source of vitamin B17. Some clinics continue to offer Laetril treatments, including the Reno Integrative Medical Center and 2 clinics in Tijuana, Mexico. So here we have a history, and again, I'm glad this article was published, because there are many documentaries and there are many books that go on to give great detail of how those medical doctors who've tried to come out with these naturopathic doctors and other practitioners who have come up with these modalities and these methods and are beginning to help people, how they were persecuted, how they were ostracized, many times by their own professions, called every name in the book, including quacks and everything else. And yet they had something that they were offering that were able to help people. And we should understand that even when his name slips me right now, but when he was first introduced that we should wash hands, he was ostracized by the medical community. And when he explained, listen, it is in hospitals, many deaths were occurring across Europe in hospitals because the doctors were not washing their hands. They were finished dealing with one patient over here who they may have had their hands in the blood and the bodily fluids of this patient. They would go directly from that patient to the next patient and not wash their hands. And when he introduced something as simple now as washing your hands, he was ostracized. And so now we know this to be something that's very, very simple and basic, but back then it was not seen to be so. In like manner, the herd mentality would tend to cause us to set reason and logic aside and to go with what appears to be authoritative sources telling us something, even if these things go contrary to our common sense. And so it's a very interesting article, and again, it was from naturalnews.com. Another article that came out this week came out on May 31st, and it's also at naturalnews.com. This particular article talked about how panic attacks and anxiety can be linked or are linked to low vitamin B and iron levels, according to a new study. And this, in this particular study, this article went on to point out how they did a small study that involved 21 people and they were from Japan. And in this particular study, they identified a lack of both vitamin B6 and iron among participants who experienced panic or hyperventilation attacks. The article says a relatively small study evaluated nutrient levels among a group of participants with varying degrees of anxiety and frequencies of panic and hyperventilation attacks, some of which resulted in emergency room visits. The article goes on to say further that a control group was also evaluated and its participants' nutrient levels compared to those of the primary group. Upon this evaluation, researchers noted that both vitamin B6 and iron were lacking in the subjects with anxiety and hyperventilation issues, while those in the healthy group had adequate levels of these important nutrients. B vitamins and iron are particularly important, the article goes on to say, for the synthesis of tryptophan into serotonin. Tryptophan, by the way, is an amino acid. B vitamins as well as iron are particularly important for the synthesis of tryptophan into serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter that actually regulates not only mood and mental stability, but also sleep and cardiovascular function. Now, if you go back and listen to some of my earlier shows here on Blue Zone Wellness, I went through the B vitamins and I went through a series on explaining the B vitamins and some of the other nutrients and how to identify deficiencies, how the body, what the symptoms are of certain B vitamins. And we talked about vitamin B6 and how important it is as one of your one of the vitamins that are necessary to your adrenal glands. And your adrenal glands are essentially the shock absorbers of your body. They help you to deal with stress. And continual sustained stress can actually deplete your adrenal glands of your B complex vitamins. And once that happens, you can get into a situation like what was happening here in the study to these people. They were not able to handle stress. Therefore, they were going into panic mode and even hyperventilation, just breaking down because they were stressed out. It's essentially what the study showed is that their adrenal glands were depleted of these necessary nutrients, and also they were low in iron. The article went on to point out further that these results, and I'm quoting, suggest that low serum concentrations of vitamin B6 and iron are involved in panic attacks and hyperventilation, wrote the authors in their study conclusion. Further studies will need to clarify the mechanisms involved, it says, in such differences. So here we have again something that is so simple many times. And you know, many times you will go and you will be placed on drugs and other things when in reality you simply had a nutritional deficiency. And the body works on such minute amounts of many of these nutrients that deficiencies can cause serious symptoms. And so it's very important to understand the importance of nutrients to your overall health. This is why we talk here about those laws of health that I talk about over and over and over. And you hear me continue to harp upon those because they're crucial to health. Again, their trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. You've also heard me talk about eating in harmony with the rainbow. The closer our diets are to the garden and to the colors of the rainbow, natural foods, the healthier we'll be, the better off we'll be mentally, physically, spiritually. Because remember, to have true wellness, all of those must be present. Physical, mental, and spiritual elements of health must be there for good health. Now, we're going to look at one other article here in the Week in Natural News, maybe a couple other articles. And we're going to look at the cost of, we'll look at a little bit maybe, the cost of Obamacare. It's another article that came out this week. It came out on the 29th. And it talked about the health care and how it had, there's a close connection to our pocketbook. And in this article, again, this article is again from naturalnews.com. It says 17 of the nation's largest insurance companies are now reporting that insurance premiums are set to spike anywhere from 100% to 400% for many Americans next year. That's in 2014. The article goes on to point out how these insurance companies, including the likes of Aetna, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and the Kaiser Foundation, have provided the House Committee of the House Commerce Committee with a new report that links the new Obamacare regulations, policies, and taxes to cause a substantial rate shock, in quotes, for many. The people who are expected to take the biggest hit are young, healthy individuals who purchase their own health insurance. The article goes on to say that a health care plan that punishes success and healthy people is the most backward and degenerate idea ever mandated. It goes on to say the report to the House Committee shows that an average premium increase for small group markets will range from 50 to 100%. One insurer concluded that nearly all states will see premium increases. A new customer in a small group market would typically see the standard average yearly rate jump from $1,896 to $3,708, which is a total cost increase of $1,812. Now, what's the significance of this to natural health? The significance of this to natural health and alternative medicine is, first of all, the healthcare system in America and in most countries, even in many of the countries that you're listening in, is not really a healthcare system. They're sick care systems. And a sick care system is not designed to really heal you or cure you. It's designed to basically manage health care. So in other words, if you have diabetes, it's decided that diabetes is incurable. If you have cancer or hypertension, it's decided at some point that it's incurable. So rather than seeking to cure or to reverse the disease, modalities are introduced, medications are introduced to help you manage it. So you're going to have it for life, we're just going to manage it, but you have to keep coming back to us. And so he does, to buy Lancets and to buy this and to buy that. So you get millions and millions of people on these programs, and then you don't really have, and you get millions of others who are eating bad diets, they're going to come onto the program. So you have a sustained healthcare system, but it's sustained by debt, and it's sustained by higher and higher healthcare costs. And because the healthcare industry, if you think about it for a moment, you have a lot of corporations, and corporations are mandated, especially if they're publicly traded. Their number one mandate, they are required by law to make a profit. So if you are listening and you thought that the healthcare system would be at your, if it's a public corporation, whatever it is, a healthcare system, insurance system, whatever it is, pharmaceutical companies, whatever they are, their number one goal, no matter what they say, is not your health. Once they become a public corporation, their number one goal by law is to turn a profit. So with that in mind, we can understand why in a sick care system where your goal is to manage health care and to make sure you turn a profit, of course they're not going to really, as I said earlier, look at other methods. And so now when you get on insurance programs and health care programs and managed health care programs, even if you live in a country where you have basically a social medicine, you may have the social medicine, but the idea that you're going to be healed. It's a social system that basically helps promote or promulgate the idea of a sick care system as opposed to giving you alternatives. And so I didn't want to go into detail in this particular article. I just wanted to note that in passing. Now, again, you listen to Blue Zone Wellness on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I want to look at the next article here. And this article is very interesting. This is from Mercola.com. And it talks about men who have a PSA test, which is a test, to see whether or not you may have prostate cancer. And how actually first of all, I've known this for years, it's not as accurate as it's propped up to be. Not only that, now, according to this article by Dr. Mercola, it could actually increase your chances of a serious blood infection by fourfold. And Dr. Mercola points out in this particular article, prostate cancer is one of the most common cancers in men, but it is not as deadly as breast cancer. And according to the latest statistics from the American Cancer Society, an estimated 240,890 men will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year, and just over 33,700 men may die from it. So only 1 in 7 diagnosed with it will die from it. Overall, American men have a 1 in 6 chance of being diagnosed with prostate cancer at some point in their lives, or 1 in 42 chance of dying from it. But most cases of prostate cancer do not occur until after men turn about 50 years old. But in recent years, there has been a study, says Dr. Mercola, a steady rise in the percentage of men in their 30s and 40s with both prostate problems and prostate cancer, primarily as a result of poor diet and increasing environmental pollution. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you're eating red meat, or any meat, but especially if you're eating red meat, you're going to significantly increase your risk of developing prostate cancer. If you're overly engaged in sexual activity, if you're not temperate, remember when we talk about those laws of health, we talk about temperate. If you're a young man and you're not temperate in your sexual activities, you're setting yourself up, you're weakening your prostate gland, and you're potentially setting yourself up to develop prostate cancer. Very important. Also, if you're not exercising, if you're eating large amounts of sugar, if you're not drinking copious amounts of water, all of these things are setting you up for prostate cancer. But the thrust of this article really is looking at the test that tells you whether or not you have prostate cancer and the accuracy or lack thereof of the test. So Dr. Mercola in this article goes on to say that, unfortunately, and I'm quoting from him, investigations over the years have discovered serious flaws with the PSA test used to diagnose prostate cancer. He says further, the U.S. and the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which has also declared women in their 40s don't need mammograms, may soon recommend that men not get screened for prostate cancer using the PSA test. Researchers are also questioning the conventional treatments of prostate cancer, which includes surgical removal of the prostate gland and radiotherapy, as they may not be necessary for most men. All in all, he says, I think this really highlights the necessity to employ a preventive strategy, which I will discuss at the end of this article. Again, now Dr. Mercola goes on to point out some of the evidence of this gold standard. So most of the time, I even have men ask me sometimes, hey, you know, I went to the doctor and my PSA was high. Just recently I had someone come to me and say, listen, I went to the doctor and I'm looking at, you know, I'm thinking about going the alternative way, but I went to my urologist. And he's telling me that my PSA is very, very high. And so he says, and so they were concerned that it was high on a level enough to be cancer, but when they did the test, there was no cancer in his body. And so, as Dr. Mercola goes on to point out further in this article, he says the prostate-specific antigen test, or the PSA test, analyzes your blood for prostate-specific antigen, or which is a substance produced by your prostate gland. And when higher than normal levels of PSA are detected, it is believed that cancer is present. However, the PSA test has been criticized as useless for a number of years now. And then he cites the Stanford University News reported back in 2004 the following, quote, the most commonly used screening tool for detecting prostate cancer, the PSA test, is virtually worthless for predicting men's risk of contracting the disease, medical school researchers have determined. Stanford scientists studied prostate tissues collected in the 20 years since a high PSA test result became the standard for prostate removal. They concluded that as a screen, the test indicates nothing more than the size of the prostate gland. So here we have again, people started getting these tests, and their doctors, you know, tell them, oh, you know, you have a PSA test, and so now we want to take out your prostate gland because your PSA is high. And when in reality, there's information, there's studies showing that did not necessarily indicate the likelihood that a man will develop prostate cancer at all. Dr. Mercola goes on to point out further in this particular article, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is now planning on recommending a D rating for PSA testing, meaning that there is moderate or high certainty that the service has no net benefit or that the harms actually outweigh the benefits. and a review of studies that have shown that the PSA blood test yields small or no reduction in prostate cancer death. He then quotes, he cites a article reported in CNN, and he says, quote, the report adds that PSA testing is associated with harms related to subsequent evaluation and treatment. The problem is that many of the cancers that get detected are so small and slow growing, they'll never be harmful, and doctors have a difficult time discerning the quick harmful cancers from the slow harmless ones. So again, we see that, you know, we hear, we say we go to the dish test and we go to that test, and the doctors tell women, well, you know, your mammogram, you need to get your entire breast removed, both of your breasts removed. And a lot of this is based on false education and false test results or false ideologies about how these tests work and their abilities. But because of so much of the media marketing and so much of the schooling and so much of the influence of the pharmaceutical companies and the healthcare industry as a whole, we often take these things without investigating them further. And as Dr. Marcola points out further in this article, he says, today many experts agree that PSA testing is unreliable, and I'm quoting him, at best and useless at worst for accurately diagnosing prostate cancer. Many also agree that routine PSA blood tests often lead to overdiagnosis of prostate cancer, resulting in unnecessary treatments. Similar to mammograms, the PSA screen has become little more than an upsell technique. He goes on to say further, the false positive rate is high, and the bulk of the harm is a result of subsequent unnecessary treatments, which may include prostate removal, may include chemotherapy, may include radiation, etc. Which, when in all reality, cancer was not even there, or the likelihood of it could not be determined from the PSA test in the first place. He goes on to say further, according to the American Cancer Society, there can be different reasons for an elevated PSA level, including prostate cancer, benign prostate enlargement, inflammation, infection, age, as well as race. He says all these factors that make PSA test results confusing, leading to the potential for unnecessary treatment and suffering when tests are elevated. As he points out, there are also some risks. He goes on to point out how a positive PSA test would typically lead to a biopsy, which has also come under increasing scrutiny and criticism in recent years. He says, on the one hand, the procedure itself may cause acute or long-term harm, and on the other hand, the rate of false negatives are very high. There are 1 million prostate cancer tissue biopsy procedures performed annually in the United States alone. So approximately 25% of these tissue biopsies are reported as positive, indicating the presence of prostate cancer. The remaining 75% are reported negative. And then he says that one-third of the men with initial negative results for prostate cancer actually do have prostate cancer that was missed by the biopsy. He says further that a prostate biopsy involves inserting fine needles into the prostate gland, but specialists have begun to worry about a recent significant increase in the risk of complications from the procedure. He says further, in particular, they are concerned about hand are hard-to-treat bloodstream infections that can require weeks of treatment. And so over the past decade, the rate of hospital admissions in Ontario, Canada, for instance, for serious infections caused by prostate biopsy increased by fourfold. And he says earlier this summer, the NPR reported, quote, doctors all over the world are increasingly concerned about post-biopsy infections. At last week's annual meeting of the American Urological Association, there were 10 reports on the phenomenon. The underlying problem, many say, is the spread of antibiotic-resistant microbes. And so he says that the needles that collect a tiny piece of prostate tissue can transport bacteria through your rectal wall into the prostate and bloodstream, and or the needles can spread harmful bacteria present in your gut into your bloodstream. So here we see that it's not all allopathic medicine in general, even though it has its benefits. Many times we have to be careful not to elevate it to the level of godhood. It's not, and there are other, and this is why it's very, very important to understand these things. I think I have a call coming in here. Give me just a second. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi. Thank you.
Oh, how are you doing today?
Good. I was looking at your show because of some pets that I have a a cat with cancer. Do you know any experience with the animals getting the cancer?
Limited experience, but the process is typically the same in the body, whether
okay.
it's an animal or a person or human.
Okay. I was using a salve called Bloodroot.
Uh-huh.
I tuned into the show late, so I'm not sure if you touched on that, because I know it's part of the Hoxie. And
yeah,
I did mention it. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I did mention it briefly, yes, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
But it seemed to be working, and then just doesn't seem to be effective, like the tumor just grew. It's pretty big. It's gotten bigger, so I'm not sure if I want to continue. Like, seems like if you let up just a little bit, it grows double the next time. You know, like maybe if you do it once a week, and I did it like a week and a half, it kind of gets away with you.
Right, and where is the tumor? Where was it? Or where is the tumor?
The tumor is on the chest wall. When I initially put the black salve in a little hole because it ulcerated, it popped out and looked like a cauliflower, and was doing okay. And then it I got nervous because someone scared me, and I kind of stopped for a little bit. And it's attached to the skin now, but it just has grown. I mean, I'm sure it's helped, but I'm just wondering if there's another approach, or would it stop working?
Now, typically, it's best to, and again, because this is, I can't give you specific, because this is, I'm not a really big into, I'm not a veterinarian, and even when I've, I'm not really, that's not really my area, even from a natural perspective. But in general, given how it typically works with a human being, it's best to keep doing it anyway.
Okay.
And also, I don't know how is the animal very old?
I believe so. She was a rescue, so yeah, probably like 13, 14.
Right. It's typically when you see those things, it's typically when you're using bloodroot and some of the other herbs, when you're seeing the benefits, many times it will seem that it's not working, or many times things will happen that seem scary, but the key is to stay consistent and to keep using it.
That is the key. Just from experience, just letting up the consistency, I could see the difference. It got away. You know what I'm saying? Like, once you commit to it, you have to stay with it. I mean, I'm back on it, but I'm just wondering if there was something else I could use on it. Someone said coconut oil. I was just wondering if you've, and you know, I'm learning for people too, but you think coconut oil helped?
For cancer of an animal, it's hard to say as a specific. I mean, coconut oil is actually one of your most, one of the best oils. But I really couldn't say in specific for cancer at that stage. It's hard for me to say. I would be speaking really out of ignorance for an animal.
Okay. Well, no, I appreciate your show. Definitely learning some stuff.
Thank you for listening.
No problem.
Well, okay. You have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And again, I'd like to thank her for that call. And again, there are even animals. Whenever you see a disease process in general, it's not a lot of difference in the way that it works in a human and in general and an animal, depending on the disease. Because cancer is a disease that is, what we're talking about here now today, to a great extent, is a disease that is that has its root in general in the immune system being severely compromised. In fact, the researchers tell us that we all have, cancer cells develop in our bodies every day. It's just that our immune system is so effective that the Creator has put a cancer cure in our bodies. Already, it's in our immune system. So when these cancer cells develop every day, our immune system kills them the same thing in animals or in human beings. But when that immune system becomes compromised for a long amount of time and it becomes overwhelmed, cancer can get a foothold. And in fact, the researchers tell us that we all have about 7 major bouts with cancer in our lives, human beings do, but we never know about these severe bouts because our immune system kills them. The only time we find out about it is if we are diagnosed with cancer, then we find out that our immune system was not operating up to par. And I actually hope to get more into some, you know, treating and working with animals even more, because I have a pet, I have a dog, and I have a cat as well. And usually when something goes wrong with them, I'm able to deal with them. But I'm just really not my area of expertise in terms of being able to go into a lot of details with respect to animals. But you do have professionals who are in the alternative medicine field who do address animals even from a natural health perspective. And back to this article here, Dr. Marcola says finally that, and I'm quoting him here, he says, a recent article featured on PreventDisease.com brings up yet another problem with the PSA test. And he says, perhaps most concerning, the PSA test frequently identifies something that disqualifies as cancer under a microscope but acts nothing like cancer in real life. That is to say, the large majority of PSA-discovered cancers would never cause any problem whatsoever if they went undetected. Finding something through screening invariably leads to treating it through conventional means which cause cancer themselves. This is another thing that many people don't realize, is that many of the treatments that are conventional treatments that are used to treat cancer actually cause cancer. Chemotherapy, for instance, chemotherapy actually causes cancer, which is just from a reasonable, not even using medical knowledge, but just from a reasonable perspective, a perspective of knowledge, of common sense almost. Why would I take something that causes cancer to treat cancer? Many people who may begin to be getting treated or may begin getting treatment for one for cancer in a particular area of the body will go through the will begin to taking treatments of chemotherapy, and the next thing you know, they have cancer somewhere else because the chemotherapy was so toxic that it actually caused cancer in the body. And not only that, is that it destroys your immunity, it destroys good and bad cells. So it destroys, even though it destroys the cancer cells, it also destroys good cells, and good cells including your white blood cells that you need when you actually when you have cancer. Finally, in this the last part, because I want to move on to we have about 10 minutes, 12 minutes left, 13 minutes left. I want to move on to talk a little. I want to finish up the part that I was speaking on last week about tea tree oil, but I also want to hit one other article here dealing with the lemon. Finally, he says, Dr. Marcola says here at Marcola.com in this article, he's quoting from PreventDisease.com about breast and prostate cancer screenings. So he says, quote, in a Swedish study of 60,000 women, 70% of the mammographically detected tumors weren't tumors at all. These false positives aren't just financial and emotional strains. They may also lead to many unnecessary and evasive biopsies. In fact, 70 to 80% of all positive mammograms do not, upon biopsy, show any presence of cancer. When it comes to prostate cancer, a 20-year study from Sweden suggests that screening for prostate cancer does not reduce the risk of death from the disease. In fact, he says, many men receive false positive results and overtreatment, adding an element of risk to wide-scale screening. Researchers report in the March 31st online issue of the BMJ. In the light of our findings, I would say that the benefit from screening is not sufficient to support mass screening, says study author Dr. Gabriel Sandbaum, an associate professor at the Karolinska Institute of Stockholm. So again, the screenings that we've been made to believe are and the tests that we've been made to believe that we must have, or that we're going to die, or that, you know, again, I'm not advocating not to get tested. I'm not advocating that there's never a need for screening. But even in natural medicine, we use a machine that uses infrared. And this machine is a thermography machine. I would highly suggest or recommend if you're a woman that that you're looking at mammograms and you're realizing the high amount of radiation involved. And not only that, by the time a mammogram can pick up a tumor, if a cancer cell or tumor, you already have about 40 million or 40 billion cancer cells there by the time it's able to detect it. Where in the thermography machine that's actually used by many naturopaths or natural practitioners or even those who just have been trained in how to use it, it actually picks up inflammation in the body. And so, and it uses infrared. And so it takes a picture similar to the type of when you look at the weatherman, and you see the different colors to show, you know, the different intensities of where the rain is or the storms are. It takes a picture of the area of the body, say the breast or the prostate, and if it shows up red, it shows where inflammation is. And those inflammation are markers. And if it shows that inflammation early on, it may even show inflammation 10 years before you develop anything. If we see inflammation in that area, we can say, okay, listen, we need to get this inflammation out because this is a weak spot. And if this inflammation is not corrected, you're going to develop, you know, you have a higher risk of developing, say, breast cancer in these areas where the inflammation is. And so the thermography machine, you don't have to worry about any of the radiation, et cetera, that's involved with a mammogram or the dangers involved with the PSA. Now we're going to do, I want to go ahead and pivot over here. We have about 9 minutes. I have one other article that I want to finish up with talking about the tea tree oil that I was speaking about on last week. Again, my name is Dr. Keith Henry. I'm a naturopathic doctor based in Orlando. You listen to Blue Zone Wellness. This last article here that we'll deal with is also from where it goes back to naturalnews.com. And this kind of ties into what we would call also our this week. We just let this article tie into our we're going to talk about lemon anyway, but this article ties into our healing food segment. And the author says, when I got this from a friend, I was in utter disbelief. And he actually has a radio program over out of Hawaii. He says, so I go to Snopes and they back it up. So in answer to the question, everyone should freeze lemons. And he says, all kinds of people are saying that the entire lemon should be used with nothing wasted. And he asks the question, how? He says, simply take the lemon, wash it, and then put it in the freezer. Once it is frozen, you get whatever is necessary to grate or shred the whole lemon without even peeling it first. Then sprinkle it on your salad, soup, cereals, spaghetti, etc., or whatever. No holes barred. What you will experience is that whatever you sprinkle it on will take on a taste you may never have experienced before. And he asked the question, why would I do this? He says, because the lemon peel contains 5 to 10 times more vitamins than the lemon juice itself, and the peel is the part that is usually wasted. Not only that, but the peel helps to get rid of toxins in the body. He says, but wait, there's more. Lemon is effective in killing cancer cells because it is allegedly 10,000 times stronger than chemotherapy. Now, I know for a fact that lemon is very, very effective. And there is one doctor that I was told about, naturopathic doctor or maybe a medical doctor that uses natural methods, that whenever he has a case of leukemia, he swears by lemon juice to reverse or cure leukemia. Now, I have not been able to verify yet if the allegation that lemon is actually 10,000 times stronger than chemotherapy, but I can tell you that it's very, very, very effective. And in many areas, and tied to that, there are many other ways that you can use it. You can use lemon, and it's very, very effective in cases of. I'll give you one or two other things that it can be used for here. It's very, very. The lemon juice is very, very effective. If you mix lemon juice and water and swish it around in your mouth, it helps to relieve sore throat as well as canker sores rather. And you can add a little salt to it, and you can gargle for tonsillitis. If you add lemon juice to hot tea and honey, it can help reduce a fever, help fight the flu, and even help relieve nausea. There are many other areas, but I'm kind of rushing through because we're almost out of time. One way you can stop a nosebleed, some people have used lemon juice applied to cotton, and they place it in their nostril to help stop a nosebleed. I've actually recommended lemon juice for someone who's having lemon juice and olive oil who's having extreme pain from gallstones to help deal with that. So lemon is actually very, very effective for for acne by putting it on your face, by putting it topically. And again, there are many other cases that we can use. We can actually do an entire show probably on just lemon and using it and how you can use it to balance or to help deal with different areas of problematic areas in the body, and as well. And maybe I'll spend a little more time with the lemon next week. I spent a little more time that I on the Week in Natural News Review, but I thought it was necessary to deal with some of those issues. Lemon is very important also for helping to balance your pH. I said earlier, if you're, for instance, in cancer, if your pH stays acid for a significant amount of time, that is creating an internal atmosphere that cancer can proliferate. So drinking lemon juice with warm water helps to alkalize the system. It also helps the liver. It's very beneficial for your liver. Now, finally, I want to go and pivot over in these last 5 minutes and complete my discussion that we were having last week on tea tree oil. And if you didn't catch it, I suggest that you go back to the show from last week and listen to the archive. And it's near the end. You'll be amazed at some of the amazing benefits of tea tree oil. Amazing benefits. I just want to continue that. And then next week, we'll talk about some of the other amazing benefits of milk thistle. Tea tree oil can be used for boils as well as insect bites, even in concentrations as low as 0.5%. That's 1 part in 200. Tea tree oil can cure over 90% of E. coli as well as staph on human skin. So that's tea tree oil. It can kill over 90%. That's very significant. So you can, if you have, I've actually had someone with staph infection, and they were having excruciating pain, and I recommended they spray tea tree oil on that until, of course, you also have to deal with that staph infection internally because it can be deadly. But just for the pain on the skin, the tea tree oil alone was able to significantly take away about 95 to 98% of the pain that they were having. It's also beneficial for for dandruff. Tea tree oil is very beneficial for dandruff, and tea tree oil shampoos actually stop the dandruff. And the studies show that the exact mechanism by which tea tree oil accomplishes this is not exactly known, but scientists speculate that the oil actually stops the dandruff by eliminating the fungal damage to the skin, because it's antifungal as well as antibacterial. It's also good for infected nails. Researchers at the University of Rochester School of Medicine, New York, tested tea tree oil in a double-blind, multi-center, randomized study that concluded about 117 patients. And they had a disease that actually causes the deterioration of the fingernails and the toenails. And they found in this particular study from the University of Rochester School of Medicine that tea tree oil was as effective as the most common prescription medication for the condition, which is called Lotrimin. So this is it's amazing that here you have a what we would call a remedy, tea tree oil, that the Creator has given us, and it's just as effective for this disease that actually causes the toenails and the fingernails to deteriorate, and it's just as effective as this medication. And it's also, lastly, tea tree oil is very, very effective for vaginosis and yeast infection. And I mentioned that briefly last time, and so an alcohol free extract, for instance, of tea tree oil, diluted with water to about 1% concentration, is actually very effective against vaginosis as well as yeast infection. And there's, there's a little bit more to it than that, but basically by diluting a 1% concentration, this is effective against these infections. And if there's used with a douche, and also if you can also combine this with weekly applications of tea tree oil soaked with tampons. Of course, diluted and alcohol-free. Again, I thank you. You've been listening to U-Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I hope that you've enjoyed the show. Again, if you came in late or you didn't get an opportunity to catch all of the show, probably about 10 minutes after the show is over, the replay will be available. I suggest that you listen to it, take notes, replay it, download it, send the link to your family and friends. encourage them to listen or to call in and ask questions, because it's very, 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 very vital information that we discuss on here. It is actually, some of it is priceless. Just, you know, knowledge is a very powerful thing to have. Again, I thank you for listening. Next time, same time, same place, 45 minutes.